Trinity College of Baltimore.
By recording, WBJC-FM presents Inside Gene Shepherd.
It's all right. Everything's okay. I mean, that gives a certain amount of stability to your life. You agree? I'm right here. It's all right. There. Oh. It's time to look a little closer at this phenomena here. And that can be scary, I'll tell you. This little effort of ours tonight has certain aspects of bad taste, which we are warning you at this point right now. Unfortunately, when you wish to report on life, you find that life itself has elements of bad taste. Now, if you wish to really honestly report on life, you have to say that's the way it is, right? Oh, yes. Oh, invariably. Already, there are three nice ladies who write letters on blue stationery who have started their letter about tonight's show already. I haven't even done anything. Dear manager of the station, why do you allow such an ill-bred, unintelligent, obscene person have airtime on your otherwise very nice station, which we know loves pets and animals, and certainly... Oh, wow. Would you please give me a little of that ill-bred music there, please? And so tonight I am... Oh, wait. This is romantic music. The romance, let's say, of the nether side of existence. A walk on the wild side, buddy, which we all have deep inside. Even the most proper ladies who wear white gloves and hats have another side to their nature, even though they've spent most of their lives suppressing it.
I don't have any idea what that person is speaking about. Madge, I can't believe a man would believe that sort of thing of two people like us. Why, Agatha herself the other day.
Sorry, ladies. You're part of the animal world, too. Doesn't make any difference how much face powder you use and how many times you put your hair up. Whether or not, you wear... But that's something else again. We don't want to get into those things. Bring it up, please, all right? Thank you. The only thing I would like to say tonight before we start is that if you find the... Well, I mean, did you find being a human being in bad taste? Yes. Well, what is taste, then? That's a tough question. Did you ever take a course in your world of course taking? We've all taken courses all of our lives. One kind or another, you're probably taking a continual course from your boss on how to get on a stick. However, yes. Some are born bosses, others are born peons. And that's just the way it'll always be. I mean, nothing to do with social status or class. It's just the way life is. I would like to ask, though, have you ever taken a course in, say, aesthetics? That's right. I'm afraid that many of you haven't. And you'll find that aesthetics is a very difficult subject because you find yourself constantly on the verge of a violent argument every 5 minutes in the class. Because aesthetics is one of those things about as difficult to define as love. And it's almost, if you think you can define love easily, have you looked up love recently in the dictionary? Well, I would suggest somebody out there, please do it for us. It's spelled with an O, O, in spite of the fact you don't pronounce it that way. It's not pronounced love. It's spelled, that's something to do with bread and stuff, you know, loaves, fishes. You know about that, don't you? You don't know about the parable of the we don't want to go into that because we'll have to get all kinds of unhappy people on that one. However, I would like to suggest, though, that you look it up. It's L-O-V-E. There's an E on the end. And that throws many of you, I know, in this age of advancing illiteracy, but that E is silent. It's not love or lovey. It's love. Just look it up there. And see whether or not the definition fits what you have thought it was. While you're at it, look up chaos. It's not spelled with a K. It's spelled with a C-H, as in Charlie. C-H. Chaos. C-H-A-O. Chaos. With an S. Chaos. Look that up. It's a good word to know because it describes almost to a T the life of the average living person. Chaos. I would also like to have you look up, if you will, right now, the word maelstrom. It's not, I don't want to offend any women livers out there. They're not refer to the male of the species. It's spelled M-A-E-L. Maelstrom. Sounds like it's a Swedish word. S-T-R-O-M. Maelstrom. Maelstrom. You know, Ingrid Maelstrom, famous. Or Bridget Maelstrom. That's a with two little things, little dots over the umlaut. But I would suggest you look those words up. And while you're doing that, we'll take time out here now to bow in the direction of the evil of all our lives, so both evil and blessing. See, all things come in halves like that. What appears as a blessing may very well turn out to be an evil and vice versa. The truth of it all is, of course, is that everything is a combination of both. It's the way it is. There's nothing ever discovered by man that is unmitigated good, nor is there anything that is unmitigated evil. Evil. That's a good word to look up. E-V-I-L, as in Knievel. Look it up. Evil. 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 Hey, let's look up some great words. How about looking up sin while you're at it? I've wondered what sin is for a long time. Sin. Sin. That's a sin. Cinema. Sin. No, there is a connection, I suppose, but the sin, it's S-I-N with an S. George, that gets close. Of course, there's many kinds. There's the sin of omission and the sin of commission. Obviously, the sin of commission is more fun. That means you've done something. A sin of omission means you ain't done something. Like, for example, if, say, you're one of the Watergate types, see, and you get a memo on your desk. The memo reads, "The following guy's done it. And please initial and return." And now you got in your mind and in your file a list of guys that did it, right? And then when the FBI man says, "Do you have any information as to who pulled off this caper?" You say, "Well, there were some memos that came through. I didn't have time to read all those memos. I don't always have time to read the memos. And I just didn't read the memos that morning. I did have one that was something like that, but I didn't read. I don't, after all, I get 500-600 memos a day." That is a sin of omission. You have omitted to tell the truth. Now, a sin of commission, oh, that could be something else again. I mean, that's a place you go to. They got the blue lights. And, you know, that's
That's a lot more fun. Of course, then you can combine that with a sin of omission by neglecting to tell the grand jury after the raid that you were the guy that went through the back window and, you know, then you've compounded your sin. You understand? This gets very difficult, all these problems of sin, because I will guarantee that almost every one of you, unless you slept the entire day, and even then you could very well be guilty of it, but I would guarantee that almost every one of you has committed some kind of sin today. Well, now, I'm just, this is just a moment of silent meditation here to look over the past 14 hours or so, and you have to look at it with a kind of eye that you're not used to looking at. That is the eye of truth. This is not the eye that we generally apply when we're looking at our lives. If you notice that very few magazine writers ever admit to any sins of their own, it's only the guy that they're writing about that they find is an evil sinner. So it is difficult to look upon yourself and concede that there too walks an imperfect being. The sin of omission and the sin of commission. So would you please give me a little romantic music there? Very good, that's excellent. Because the sin of omission is often the most subtle and the most evil of all sins, friends. And you're probably guilty of one right now by not conceding that during the past 12 hours you have committed a sin. You're guilty of another one by just looking me right in the eye and saying, like hell I did, I never committed no sin today. You've just sinned. So you see how difficult it is to avoid sin. And I might add that the classical biblical list included seven deadly sins. But since the technological revolution, there are at least 40 or 50 more. Because after all, during the time of Abraham and Gilead, they had not even thought of bugs. I mean, the idea of a multiplex Xerox machine, where you multiplex and Xerox all your friend's fingerprints and then sell them for a large amount to his enemies, was never even thought of during the time of St. Luke or even St. John. So all these things, you know, are very complex. And not only complex, let's put it this way, they have muddled the entire issue of sin today. So even a man standing up there, you know, who is expounding on sin, could very well be committing an ultimate sin in his own way, because, you see, he's avoided the ultimate sin, which it gets very difficult. I told you this program tonight was to be in very bad taste. Because in our time, even to mention that there is a possible thing called sin, which is a thing you could be guilty of, is in bad taste. Sin is something that others do. Could be very well defined as that. What we do is a combination of mistakes, bits of misinformation, misunderstandings. Often your own sin is called that. I wasn't aware of... or I thought I had, or, well, it wasn't quite like that. These are all the beginnings of what is called, in today's sociological terminology, the ultimate and universal alibi, or cop-out, in the voice of the man on the street. Just continue that, Arthur, that's all. Very good. This romantic concept we're proposing here tonight, it has so many ramifications. No, you may be committing a sin by listening to this. You understand that? Oh, yes. Many a man has committed a sin by reading the wrong book. Oh, that's... it depends again. It goes back to that old problem, semantics. That's the worst problem of all. I'll tell you, that's a real drag. I'll tell you that. In other words, what is sin? And, I mean, you'd have a tough time finding, say, for example, John Ehrlichman. He's been trying to define it. That's why he's got that worried look on his face. Because, you see, you can often... let's walk into the average office here today. And all of a sudden, three guys in uniforms, wearing badges, were to all of a sudden say, "All right, all of you guys, into the wagon. It's all over." Well, the entire staff of the company would get up and leave.
without an argument, and maybe take 5 or 6 blocks before they start yelling and hollering that they've been unfairly arrested. Their first impulse would be, okay, I'm glad it's all over. I'm glad you caught me. After a while, you know, then they start saying, oh, wait a minute, it wasn't us at all, it was Bullard. And by the end of the afternoon, the whole issue is muddied, and they're taking depositions. They may even wind up with lie detector tests and digging in the garbage for old memos and stuff like that, you know, and it just gets to be a hell of a mess. And then even the use of that word to many people is sin. And yet, hell is supposed to be a word that defines a place where people go as the result of their sins. So to mention that word itself is not a sin. That's like saying mentioning the word jail is a crime. How could this be? Impossible. So to use the word hell is merely to evoke good. You are saying, I am threatening you with the ultimate perdition. When you say, go to hell, you are saying to a man, I think for your sins you must be and should be ultimately condemned to swimming up the river Styx upstream against the rapids with all the rest of those damned souls. And incidentally, the word damn is not a sin either. It refers to the process of punishment. I'll let that soak in for a while out there. And so the problem, you know, is so complex that at a certain point, one is able to unanswer, really totally not answer the question. One begs the question, as the phrase goes. But now let's get back to your life of the past 24 hours. There is not a single person, I guarantee you, listening to us at this point, who has not sinned, and many of them capital sins, according to some belief, tenet, basis of judgment in any given structure of behavioral patterns. Let's say society. What is society? But it's a group of people who got together who say, oh, we believe the following things, and so let us behave according to that that premise. Now, you may not have sinned according to your society, but now, who is to say that another society looking upon you would not condemn you as an eternal sinner? And who's to know which crowd is right? The question is any crowd right? That's another question. It gets very difficult. I mean, that's why Lewis Carroll wrote Alice in Wonderland. What was his phrase? It gets difficulter or something. What was the phrase? It gets something, something, more and more. Well, it does. Whether the quotation is right or wrong. I mean, and I have always admired people and envied and feared people, by the way, who are absolutely sure that they can define sin. And they're, by the way, almost always inveterate letter writers. You see them in the Times daily. They can define who was lousing up, who was doing it to us. Of course, the letter writer is always innocent. And in fact, he is a victim of the evil of all these others. I have never seen a letter from a man in the Times, in the News, in the Voice that says, I concede. I am one of the evil ones. I've been thinking about it lately, Village Voice. And I just want to say that it's unfair. Last week, I wrote this terrible letter about President, whoever the current president is, doesn't matter, and about Congressman so-and-so. And I've been thinking about it, and I'm worse than any of those guys. And I want to admit it. And if any of your letter writers want to write letters to your paper excoriating me as being one of the contributory factors to the downfall of Western man, I accept that totally, without question. My address is below. This is where guilt belongs. And I'm not kidding. I'm not writing this tongue-in-cheek. It's true, man. I'm just laying it out. You won't see that letter. Because no one can conceive of it. No one will believe it. And by the way you really make your fellow man bugged is to admit your guilt. That infuriates him. If you say, yeah, okay, I did it. Boy, it was great while it lasted. I did it. A whole mess. At that point, the prosecuting attorney will say, we'll get to the bottom of this no matter how you equivocate, sir.
But I'm telling you.
So, I know what kind of that trick you're pulling on us now. You're attempting to win over the jury with that cheap, shoddy trick. This business of walking around and crawling around on your arms and crawling on your hands and knees. We know that trick. We'll get to the bottom of it all. So we'll put you down as refusing to testify.
But I did it. I did it.
Oh, no. We know that your henchmen were just as guilty. No, your henchmen, I didn't. My henchmen didn't do it at all. I did it. They did it at my evil bidding. That's called an improper answer. A proper answer is to immediately show your files, which have been doctored, and match them up with the prosecution's files, which have been doctored, and see which one can sway the jury, which also has been doctored. So, you know, there you are. And how do you see heaven, or hell for that matter, as long as we're going to get into total bad taste here? I mean, how do you see it? Some people see it as some great vast Howard Johnson in the sky, where the air conditioning is always just right, and the Muzak plays nothing but Lawrence Welk forever. Well, that's one concept of heaven. I'm not going to argue with yours. I mean, who am I to argue with your concept? Other people think of heaven, curiously enough, as a place where all sins are eternally available. And there are no value judgments passed. So there you are, floating around in a cloud, smoking your pot. And, you know, you have 45 ladies crouched on your knee and everybody's singing. This is another concept of heaven, which is a curious one, self-contradictory concept. Many of them are. How do you see hell? Which you have to answer if you've already envisioned heaven. You have to answer that because there is always the Alpha and the Omega. There's no question. That's called horizontal thinking, which incidentally is out of date. One does not think of the consequences of one's action. One thinks only of the action. Because if one thinks of the consequences, one is guilty of horizontal thinking. Vertical thinking is saying, it's a groove, man, let's do it. Later on, when you're bundled off to the tombs, that's always the result of an old-fashioned society which constantly thinks in terms of give and take, action and reaction, which is a Newtonian law of physics. You can't escape it. You cannot. It's like buying yourself a voluntary case of cold sores. No escape. And so the wind blows through the rigging on late nights, and St. Elmo's fire plays over the yardarms. Did you like that? You know, man is the only creature that we know of. Now, again, I have to add that qualifying factor there. He's the only one who continually studies himself. Continually. He is constantly interested in what he's doing, what he's thinking, and he studies himself. And yet the difficulty of studying man is that man constantly gets mad. I mean, even you yourself, see? So it's we're studying an unstudiable subject when we study man. Do you buy that, Art? You're thinking about that. Well, it's like a squirrel attempting to discover what squirrels are. It's a very difficult thing to do. I mean, now an elephant can possibly discover what a squirrel is, and a squirrel can discover what an elephant is, but it's very difficult for a squirrel to remove himself from his basic squirreldom enough to study squirrels. So it's very difficult for any science to have, or religion, or sociology, or ology, to define what man is. And so now we've taken to studying him the way we study other animals, which is fascinating. Did you know that? There's a trend now among scientists to study man the way they would say study the tiger. Now, how do you study the tiger? First of all, you study a tiger by looking at the things he does. You go to his haunts, you see, and you discover that X numbers of tigers sleep X numbers of days a week, and that they kill X numbers of animals a month. In other words, behavioral. Now, do you know one of the most recent ways discovered to study what people do in television land out there? I'm talking about the people who watch TV. Is to watch the pressure of the water supply system of any given city. Do you know how that is affected? Okay. Did you read about what they did in Lafayette, Louisiana? They just completed a study at the Lafayette Water Works, and they have defined that a surefire method of measuring TV audiences is the bathroom habits of tube addicts. Jim Love, the water department superintendent, says a graph gauging water pressure in the city invariably dips during the commercial breaks. And then takes a big plunge at the show's end, when the viewers trek off to guess where. So they can just sit down there, and they don't even have to know what time it is. They just watch the big gauge. And they can also tell, incidentally, how popular a show is by how the pressure builds up. They say that people continually get up and run off to the john during a dull show. But he says, like, say, for example, during the showing of Airport, which was a big movie at that time, the pressure went almost out of sight. Nobody, you know, everybody stayed there. And so there was one moment there when the bomb went off in the plane. Did you see this? The bomb went off the pilot. The minute that the plane landed, the water pressure dropped an unprecedented 26 points. Okay, now that's now no matter what happens, you can study man by, say, toilet habits. More so than by what he says. So if you were to talk to, 1,500 of those people, you went around. Now, probably out of the 1,500, 200 of them like to feel that they're too intellectual to be watching Airport. But they secretly were, see? So if the pollster says, did you watch Airport last night? Oh, of course not. I was watching Channel 13 when they had a very interesting program about the background of the kind of paint that Leonardo da Vinci used. It was a very interesting documentary. And all the while, he's sitting there, you know, watching John Wayne fly his plane, or whoever it was. Now, another thing, are you aware that archaeologists, listen to this fascinating story. This is from San Francisco. Actually, it's from, it's San Francisco. The piece came from San Francisco, but the actual studying is being done under the aegis of the University of Arizona. Which is a good school, by the way. And what they're doing out there is a group of archaeologists and archaeological students have taken to studying garbage to find out just what people are like, you know. Really studying garbage. Did you know about that? I'll read you the story. A group of archaeology students in Tucson have been analyzing for a long time garbage of 600 households from 19 different census levels and tracts and so on. In other words, a cross-section. And are you curious about some of the findings they've made about garbage? Okay. The results indicate that white households waste more than do ethnic minorities, but low-income groups consume the most costly child education items, as well as the most liquor, the most bread, and the most household sanitation items. Now, that's fascinating. Persons living in middle-class neighborhoods seem far more conscious of meal costs than lower-class, low-cost, low-income people. In fact, they buy more chicken and more low-cost meat, such as pork, than those in minority areas. But dairy products, fresh fruits, and vegetables made up equally high percentages in garbage bags from low-income neighborhoods as from the high-income country club estates. In other words, they agreed on vegetables. The University of Arizona, they wear white gloves when they investigate this. They wear white coats, rubber gloves. This whole entire crowd has been investigating garbage for some time, and they call it Le Projet du Garbage. That's kind of elegant. Garbage. A modern-day archaeological dig through garbage bags. Well, what you find in garbage is the result of what people actually did, said the doctor, who's from Tucson. Not what they think they did or what they want an interviewer to think they did. What we're trying to do on one level is to sensitize the public as to what their behavior actually is and what it's costing them. You know, among other things that the archaeologists found when digging among the garbage is, one, a diamond ring, silver-studded motorcycle boots, a drive-in movie speaker. Somebody stole a speaker and then thrown it out. Unopened packages of cheese, crushed pineapple, formerly fresh sea trout, and a lot of illegal drug paraphernalia. Emphasizing that the project is geared to protect personal privacy, the director, the doctor, says, well, you see, legally, when garbage is picked up, it is no longer it's no longer owned by the person who thrown it out. It's actually legally owned by the sanitation department. Did you know that? You didn't, huh? Well, anyway, he finds by sifting through the garbage of blacks, American Indians, Asians, young adults, and the aged, they have discovered that all the groups are status brand conscious. Standard marketing beliefs say that that young adults particularly favor name brands. Now, how do you like that? That's fascinating. He says, he goes on to say that what they're going to do is they're going to continue this study, see, and they're going to wind up knowing just that. Now, what is that called? Now, do you know anything about archaeology? Now, listen carefully to this. There is this, you know, for years, they studied ancient man by the same method. Are you aware of that? That one of the most important sources of information we have about prehistoric man is through exactly that method. They dig through his garbage heaps that he has left behind. What are they called? Class, in archaeology terms. You mean you've never heard the term midden heap? That's right. That's called a midden heap. Spelled with two D's. It's not a mitten heap. It's midden heap. And a midden heap is all the stuff you throw out to the back of your cave. See, now when they find in ancient man, they find when they go through his midden heap. For example, they will find thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of old petrified clam shells. So they know what he ate then. You know, they knew that this guy spent a lot of time. Once in a while, they'll find charred bits of bone of some kind, see? And they'll know that at that time he also did some hunting as well as fishing. And among the midden heaps, they'll find an old piece of a busted axe head, an old pot, you never think of ancient man as you know, throwing out the garbage. But he did. So you had to clean out the cave once in a while. It got to be a hell of a mess. And man... Man is not alone. You know, animals do that. They clean out their cave once in a while. Did you know that? Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And they throw all the junk out. And the first caveman, you know, that looked around in that dark cave and said to his mate or whoever was in the cave with him, which translated mean, this place is getting to be a rat's nest. Let's clean this damn joint out. I can't stand it another minute. And the next thing you know, his mate, or whoever it was, answered back, meaning, speak for yourself. I don't see you cleaning out the garbage. Well, that, of course, began the first original argument as to who the hell is going to clean out the garbage. And the next thing you know, they're all out there piling up all the old clamshells and busted pieces of old broken axe heads and swords and junk. And they wound up with what we call today a midden heap. Well, we've got a midden heap. What do you think our dumps are called? 5,000 years from now, they will be going through the Secaucus dumps with a fine-tooth comb. No, it won't be as smelly by then. No, because all that stuff will have long since disappeared, and they'll dig out nothing but old, all kinds of tin cans. They'll be digging out aluminum cans. We may be called, at that point, we may be called the Tab people. Who knows?
referring to those little beer tabs, you know, that come off that air, billions of beer, just like they call people, you know, the Copperhead Point people or the Flint Axe people. We may be called the beer tab people. You don't know. Thousands of years.
Rejoice.